afternoon and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, May 21st, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by TKB Trading, supplier of top-grade colors to add to your line of mineral makeup, soap, and other bath and body care products. Order by June the 3rd to enjoy their Indie Business discount. Visit tkbtrading.com for more information. In a 2003 Newsweek cover story entitled, No Sex Please, We're Married, there was a discussion of a study showing that intimacy in the bedroom has declined significantly since the 1950s. And if magazine articles that I peruse at the checkout stand are any indication, things are not much better today. Of course, there are a million reasons why this may be happening, and every couple is different. But think about it, with so many people starting businesses in their home, it just got me to thinking that maybe a part of the reason, whether large or small, may be that so much business is being brought home, so much business is being brought into our personal spaces that we just don't have time anymore, or we feel like we don't have time, to spend some intimate times with our partners and even with our family members. And to help us talk about what we can do in terms of the designing and planning of our personal spaces to help minimize any intrusion from business, we've got Kelly Spiewak, the Interior Design and Residential Planning Department Director at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. Kelly works in the department there where accredited courses are offered both in person and online. So for those of you indies out there who may be interested in starting a career in the interior design business, we're going to pick Kelly's brain about that as well today. But first, we're going to talk about this trend of the bedroom as the new home office. Kelly, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
It's great to have you here. Now tell me, Kelly, is the bedroom as the new home office something new?
I think it's becoming more and more of a new trend. Also, the more and more interior design journals that I'm reading indicate that more and more people are working from home, and that certainly means that a lot more interior designers are helping their clients become educated on the importance of, you know, kind of integrating a home office in with their everyday life.
And in your design journals, Kelly, are you seeing that many people have offices set up in their bedrooms?
Yes, bedrooms is one of the most popular spaces, and also other places in the home as well. I see a lot of trends, you know, in the kitchen, in the corner of a living room or the dining room, but bedroom seems to be pretty popular.
And do you think, is that because it's just convenient?
I think it's convenient. People also feel maybe it's a little bit out of the way. It's not so public. You know, when they're inviting guests and family members over to their home, the bedroom is kind of one of those rooms where they can shut the door and just put it out of mind. A little bit more private, I think.
Well, Kelly, what can we do? Let's just start maybe broadly, not focusing on one area of the home at first, but just in general. If someone is going to have a home office set up in their home, what sorts of things, just as a general matter, should we be concerned about when we're designing that space?
One of the first things that an interior designer can help a homeowner think about is ergonomics. Before you start thinking about color and furniture and everything else, is just being healthy while you're working. It's so easy to just pop up on the couch with a laptop, and if you do that day after day, you know, you're going to end up with carpal tunnel problems and all sorts of back problems and eye strain problems. So basic ergonomics is something I think the homeowner needs to think about first and foremost. Where can they set themselves up in their home that they're going to be able to be comfortable and focused and sitting properly? So, you know, interior designers can help with that, or the homeowner can do research on their own as well. You know, ergonomic chairs, desks that are at the proper height for typing, those kinds of things.
Okay, so look at ergonomics first. And then when you're actually looking around, let's just say someone has a small home and maybe all the bedrooms are taken, you know, master bed, a couple of kids or whatever, and there may not be an actual room, whether large or small, that's big enough to accommodate, you know, a desk and a chair and a file cabinet. What kind
right.
of suggestions can you make for that person?
I think look at areas and pieces of furniture that can serve double duty. I've recently put a home office space into a closet in a spare bedroom. So, you know, being able to take out everything that was in the closet, finding an additional, you know, storage space for those items. Maybe it's, you know, summertime wardrobe or something. Store those in a different location and outfit the closet so that it has a desk surface, a chair that rolls underneath, those kinds of things. So you don't need to, you know, have that square footage if square footage already exists. Or find another piece of furniture, like a lot of the home office stores and even some of the regular furniture stores that sell bedroom suites and so forth have like armoires that are like furniture, you know, like a wardrobe kind of thing, something with double doors, maybe it has a couple drawers, but an opportunity for you to open the doors during the day, pull out the desk surface, set up your laptop, and then at the end of the day just kind of shut the doors, pack everything else away, and it kind of just blends in with the room.
Do join us, 800-773-0355. We're here today talking with Kelly Spiewak, Design Residential Planning Department Interior Director at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. Kelly, when you talk about some of these types of, you know, store-in-the-closet kinds of offices, what kinds of prices are we talking about for these types of things?
Really, I mean, when I talk about with my students, you know, what does good design really mean and how much does good design cost? Does it always have to be expensive? It really doesn't. You know, good design just needs to fit with the client's needs, and it needs to be, you know, comfortable and conducive to whatever's going on in that particular household. So, I mean, I think every price point is attainable. It just depends on, you know, where you are and what you need to accomplish. Interior designers can also help a client, you know, work a budget for a project. That's something that maybe isn't always readily known, and a lot of people think, oh, only the very wealthy can afford to have an interior designer. But there's so many different levels that an interior designer can help with. I mean, everything from just kind of organizing your home to helping you, you know, acquire a budget. The average homeowner might not know how much something a project might cost. You know, they want to redo their kitchen or redo something. They might not have an idea, but an interior designer can help establish that. So really any price point is attainable.
And in the interior design industry that you work in, Kelly, what kind of price ranges are there? Like, I know everybody's going to be different, but basically for someone who's a small business owner, maybe going to an interior designer who's also a small business owner, is there a general price range that you can expect, like for an hourly or two-hour consultation?
It's going to vary between, you know, maybe $50 an hour to $75 an hour, maybe a little bit more in larger cities. But, you know, talking to them on the phone, sometimes initial consultations are free. It just depends on what you want that interior designer to do. So if I was being asked just to come to someone's home and talk, I might charge an hourly rate, and I might stay 2 or 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then my services might be done. They might get all they need from my services at that point. So it varies, but it's worth doing a little bit of research and trying to find a designer that you're comfortable working with.
Well, that certainly doesn't sound like it would break the bank. Now tell me, for us small businesses, $200, $250 may not break the bank, but it's still a lot of money. So, Kelly, what are some of the things that business owners need to be aware of in terms of why they need a designed space to work in? Why is it important to consider the layout and the design of a workspace when, as you say, you can just pull out your laptop, aside from the ergonomic reasons?
Right. Well, definitely the health reasons, but also because your home is your sanctuary. You want to still be able to have spaces in your home that are relaxing and comfortable for guests and for your own family. So an interior designer can help you really integrate something like a home office or something a lot more utilitarian into your everyday environment and have it not stand out. You know, it's not like just plopping a desk in the middle of your living room floor, but being able to select pieces that maybe already match with your existing decor or, you know, even finishes and patterns and that kind of thing that integrate in with what you already have.
And Kelly, is there any such thing as like a home office kit, like a list of items that, I mean, other than the desk and the chair and a lamp, I mean, you know, and basic stuff that we all know, What sorts of things can we include in our mindset when we're thinking of setting up our home office in terms of things to kind of spruce it up and make it pleasant to work in?
Well, Donna Maria, kit is a good idea. I'll have to work on that.
Just
to have a ready-made kit is a really...
If I was a home office designer, I'd want to get a kit out there.
That's a great idea. But basically, when I work with clients, I try to... Everyone works differently. So some people are pilers. Some people, you know, stack different piles of information. I'm going to get to this one, then I'm going to get to this next pile. Some people do to-do lists, and they kind of cross things off. Some people need to have everything out in plain view in front of them, or they feel like they're going to forget to do it. And other people, you know, are paper filers. They file everything and anything possible. So everyone works differently. So one of the first things you need to do is kind of assess for yourself, how do I work? You know, do I need a lot of storage space? That's often something that's missed by a lot of, you know, people doing home office. They underestimate how much storage space they're actually going to need. They think, oh, everything I have is on my computer, but they don't realize that maybe they're printing everything out. You know, some people don't read email off the screen. Some people print it and read it. And so everyone works differently. So that's basically my best piece of advice in terms of getting started is assess how you work. What is it that you need to do throughout your day that, you know, gets you from, you know, point A to point B and all your projects completed in a timely way?
When I think of you asking me that question, I actually break it down into two. How do I work and how should I work?
Well, that's true, too.
And then it's like two questions, like, okay, do I take this interior design advice while I'm still trying to get where I want to be, or do
right.
I get there first?
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that, because interior designers, I never realized this when I was just starting out in the field, but I really need to be a lot of an educator, even when I'm working with clients and not with real students, because I often need to educate my client on exactly what you mentioned, how to work better. Maybe I can look at how they're working currently and then suggest things like, I noticed that you sit this way in your chair. Have you ever thought about a footrest or a keyboard tray? Or, you know, I've noticed that you have all these piles here in front of you. Have you ever thought about some sort of something that we mount to the wall and all of your items can be stored from left to right, you know, in order of the importance of how you need to work on them. So those are the types of things that an interior designer can certainly help you do and assess, you know, look at how you're working and maybe, if possible, suggest ways that you can improve.
I would imagine that you give a lot of freelance organizational advice.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kelly, what colors are good for a home office? Let's just say, well, let's take it in two different ways, because so many people don't actually have a separate room in their homes or
right.
in their apartments or whatever. So let's look at it from the perspective of someone who's not in a closet, which is a great idea. I want to talk about that, too. But someone who's, like, in the den or, you know, in the kitchen. There's a little area in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
What sorts of things can we do to kind of separate that out so that it looks like a place where we want to go and get in our work mindset, but which doesn't really interfere too much with the flow of the room?
Right. You do want to stay consistent with wherever you're putting your home office. You want to stay consistent with the other things in that area. But making it look more professional and enticing you to work every day is really important, too, especially for the work-at-home person who's, you know, more enticed to maybe pet the dog or throw a load of laundry in than actually sit and stay focused on their work. So I think, you know, making an organized space, using items that maybe can serve double duty, and by that I mean maybe it's a corner of your room and you have an ottoman that you normally use, you know, in your living room, and it opens up and there's file storage underneath. So by day it's an ottoman, by day it's a home office space where you can do your filing, and in the evening it turns into an ottoman. So those are the kinds of things that you can, you know, help to integrate the office into your environment. Maybe it's a corner of the kitchen and you have a lot of stainless steel in your kitchen, for example. Maybe you use some stainless steel accessories on your desk, but they're definitely more desk accessories than, you know, a kitchen appliance or something. But definitely integrating it into your existing decor is really important.
Mm-hmm. And if you do have a separate office space, like, give us some tips on how to decorate an office space. You know, you've just moved into a new location, a new house or whatever, and you finally have your home office space. And it's a white wall.
Right.
And your desk is in there, and you really, you know, you have the ability to spend a little bit of money making it, you know, sprucing it up and making
mm-hmm.
it great. What would you suggest to do?
To me, I mean, speaking for myself, I lend myself, I kind of lean more towards warmer colors, you know, the browns, the rusts, the oranges, things that make me feel safe and happy and just kind of comfortable and cozy. So I might either pull accessories or paint a wall in that room that, you know, has more of the warmer earth tones kinds of things. I really like textures.
Start with, and we're going to come back and get the rest of your suggestions
okay.
for that new home office when we come back, Kelly.
Great.
Talking with Kelly Spiewak today on Indie Business Radio. She's talking with us about how to design a home office space that helps you be productive without interfering too much with the rest of your personal life and your family. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking today with Kelly Spiewak, the Interior Design Residential Planning Department Director at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. Kelly is sharing with us some of her best tips for how to design a home office that doesn't interfere with our homes. And before we took our first break, Kelly was sharing with us her best tips for decorating a new home office, and we're talking about something that is a separate space and the walls are white and it's ready for us to put our stamp on. So, Kelly, you started by saying warmer colors. What were some of those warmer colors?
Definitely. Colors in the either the neutral or the reds and orange family. So we think of, like, rusts and terracottas and mustard colors. To me, those colors are warm and cozy and comfortable, you know. But definitely, you know, a client should go after a color, if they have a blank slate to deal with, a color that really entices them and makes them feel happy and good.
Okay.
I also think that texture... texture is really important to me. I like using, you know, different types of wicker and rattan and bamboo baskets. I use items like that to store different office utensils. I kind of like things readily available but out of sight. So, you know, tossing in your stapler and your hole punch and your various, you know, calculator and all kinds of other little desk items into a larger storage bin like that creates a really nice, neat way to keep things organized and brings a lot of texture into your office.
And it can be like a total mess inside the wicker basket.
Absolutely. And that's
and no one's the wiser, right?
Absolutely. and it creates a real fast way to get something out and just kind of chuck it back away when you're done with it. I also think it's really important to bring in family items or collectible items, you know, photos of your family and friends that really make you feel happy. And collectibles, you know, if you collect a particular item, that I think you should have those things around you, because for me and for clients that I work with, to have things around you that make you happy and content, you're going to want to be in that space and you're going to be more productive in that space.
That's a really good tip. So in addition to the family photos, which probably everyone thinks about, collectibles and things that basically have nothing to do with the business, but which kind of set your personality apart?
Yes, definitely. Something that someone's going to come into your office, perhaps, you know, in a regular work setting and say, wow, I didn't know you collected giraffes, or whatever the thing might be. But in the home, I mean, those are the same types of things you surround yourself with in your bedroom, in your living room. Those are the same types of items you should have around you in your office space, too.
And can you offer some tips, too, on draperies or wall coverings? I'm sorry, window coverings?
I'm a big fan of the blind just because it allows you to control the level of light that comes in. So, you know, a horizontal, regular kind of mini blind, you can buy them in all types of different colors. But I tend to do minimalistic on the window treatments, just go very simple. If anything, maybe a simple window valance over the top, but something that's going to be a little bit more, you know, just plain and conservative in nature, and just allow you to have a lot of natural light, especially if you have windows in the space.
Uh-huh. And, you know, one of the coolest things I saw someone do, and do you suggest this to people, is they went to, like, a local craft store, and they bought, well, they had already purchased, like, an inexpensive curtain rod, and they bought some material, and they draped it over the curtain rod and put, like, some ivy on each end of the curtain rod.
Sure. I mean, anything, like I said, it's really, there is no wrong and right to design, and I think that that's what most homeowners get all freaked out about with design. You know, it's really what makes you feel comfortable. And an interior designer is going to come and help you bring out you in your space. And I think that's the most important thing to think about. So, you know, if fabrics and plants and those kinds of things are inspiring to you, then those are the types of things you should definitely use in your space.
And is it really true, Kelly, that a few mirrors can make the room look bigger and sort of give you the illusion of a more spacious working environment?
Absolutely. It helps reflect the light. If you have a window and you put a mirror at the opposite end, it can create the illusion of having multiple windows in a room. Larger mirrors can also help you with that illusion of space, absolutely.
Oh, that's something to think about, too, because you can really get some good mirrors for good prices.
Yeah, definitely. And there's great shapes that are available, and they're easy to hang as well.
Uh-huh. So now let's talk, Kelly, for a minute about someone who's actually setting it up in a home.
Okay.
In the bedroom,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of where this whole thing kind of started for me. Because, and let me just share a little bit, too, about where my mind was when I heard about you and your areas of expertise. I had a home office for 5 years. I was so totally spoiled. It was a separate space right next to the family room, so the sitter could be in there with the kids and I could be working, and the powder room was right next door, so everybody who had to go potty and everything, I was right there in the mix of everything, but I was still in a separate room. Then we moved to another state, and before we bought a house, we rented a house. And I was in the master bedroom for 9 months. And, you know, we were renting, and I knew we were leaving, so I didn't decorate it. It was just sort of this place that was there as a placeholder. And probably 9 months is not really enough time to decorate anything that you're renting, but it kind of just got me to thinking about that, because obviously the time that I spent with my family was very different when I had a home office in my bedroom.
Yeah.
So let's start, if we could talk about that and how a home-based business owner can set things up to maintain that distinction, but obviously also make it all flow together, because while there's a distinction between home and business, if your business is in your home, there's going to be some obvious overlap.
Yeah, there's definitely overlap, and the more clients I work with that are working in their home at least part of the week or 100% of the week, their work week, it's really hard to make that distinction between family life, and because you want to check email at 10 o'clock at night, and it's just really hard to make that separation. But in a bedroom space, I think it's really important to really try to make that separation. So you want to select pieces that are going to be set up permanently in the corner of a room or an area of the room, or even some of these more popular plan homes that are being built in suburban America today have little sitting areas and things off of the master bedroom area. Those are great home office spaces because they are a little bit more removed. But say you're, you know, in a regular master bedroom situation where you have a corner of your room and you're going to dedicate that corner to an office space, you want to make that furniture feel warm and comfortable and make sure that it blends with the rest of your living environment. So the wood tones, it's very important to have those blend with your existing furnishings. Perhaps you select a little bit more of a comfortable chair situation so that it blends a little bit more with that relaxed kind of setting of your living room, your bedroom rather. I think it's really important to make sure that the office is just really a place where it's going to be comfortable for you to work. So if you're in the corner of your bedroom, make sure that at the end of the day you get in the habit of, putting all those things back in those baskets, stacking those baskets back up, so that your work isn't out there to tempt you to just sit right back down for a second to check an email or to just write one more letter. So I think it's really a lot of personal, control as well.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe turn that email sound off.
Yeah,
that's
a good idea. Mine barks at me, so yeah, that's a great idea.
Barks. I have a friend who's moves. Those are really good tips for kind of helping everything to flow. And then when you're talking about actually decorating the home office in the bedroom, that's one thing. But let's flip it, and how can we decorate our bedrooms if we know we're going to be sharing home and office space for an extended period of time? What are some of the things that we can do to our bedrooms to make them more inviting on a personal level, as we also, obviously have them be utilitarian for business purposes?
I actually think if you're starting with a clean slate and you're open to more of a contemporary, clean, kind of modern style, that's going to lend itself a little bit more to an office environment or an office/bedroom environment, because a lot of the office furniture and the more the traditional office type items are a little bit more contemporary in nature. So it might be a little bit easier to blend the clean lines of a modern bed frame with the clean lines of an office desk, for example, in a bedroom space. But built-ins in a modern and contemporary bedroom environment are going to help you hide a lot of things as well. So, and they can serve dual purpose. If you have an entire wall of, say, floor-to-ceiling cabinets that even have maybe a frosted glass door, you can have clothes on the one half, and on the other half can be complete office supplies. So I think that and they're hidden behind double doors. And
right.
So to me, that contemporary look is going to lend itself a little bit better if you're starting with a clean slate.
Kelly, I went into buy my kids some shoes in an outdoor strip mall one day, and the store next door was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a store where you could buy beds, twin, full, king, and queen, with the desk attached.
Oh, yeah. Even IKEA, which is kind of everyone and knows what an IKEA is, has a lot of kind of combination furniture pieces like that as well. So it's becoming more interesting in terms of the newer products that are coming out there and more available to the homeowners.
Yeah, IKEA is a good place to mention as well. But what was so interesting to me about this place was that's all you could buy.
Huh.
They didn't have chairs. They didn't have storage, they didn't have fuck up, they had nothing, and they had seven or eight of them in the retail showroom area, so you could see all the different sizes, and you could see how the bed folded up. I thought that was interesting, too. The desk did not fold up and go away, the bed did.
Oh.
You fold the whole thing up, and then they also had some models where the desk was actually behind double doors.
Oh, that's
so it kind of looked like an armoire sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was quite utilitarian. It was like you said, it was very contemporary. Not something that, is definitely not, you're not cherry wood and all the traditional, brass handles and stuff. It was
right. Very
minimalist. But I thought it was so fascinating because it was a separate place for something like that. And there's no shortage of places for us to go to buy beds and
furniture.
That's
definitely true. There's everywhere you turn, there's a new place opening up. But those sound like great pieces, and those are definitely the types of pieces that we want to look for if we start out, in that situation. Most of the time when I'm working with somebody or talking to someone, if they already have an existing bedroom and all of a sudden now they have a new job and they're going to be working from home and they're looking to, introduce it later. But if you're moving into a place and you have a clean slate, I definitely think those are the types of pieces you should target.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And let's not forget, too, we can also use, if we have, like, garage space for filing, right?
True, definitely. Garage spaces, attic spaces, backup files, that kind of thing, it's great. They don't all need to be, you know, readily available, at your fingertips, only the things you use every day. So that's a really great point, you know, using other space in your house to store some of the items that you don't access all the time.
Mm-hmm. And what about plants in a home office area? What do plants do to enliven a space, and do they have to be actually live?
I think that's a definite controversy. Some designers I work with definitely say they have to be live. I kill everything live, so I definitely lean more towards the fake plants. But I think they really help make a space feel more, you know, down to earth and homey. Live plants definitely do help clean the air. They definitely help, you know, that exchange of oxygen. So there's definite truth to a live plant is going to be more helpful and a little bit more beneficial to you. But the green, even of a fake plant, is going to help you feel a little bit more connected to the outside and a little bit more grounded in terms of a space. I think that's a really great, easy, inexpensive decorating tool that you can use almost anywhere in your home.
If you have any questions that you'd like to ask about decorating your home office space, do join us on Indie Business Radio today by giving us a call at 800-773-0355, and you can talk to Kelly Spiewak. She's an interior designer, and she may have some great tips to offer you about designing your home space. You can join the discussion, as always, at our new blog, IndieBusinessBlog.com. If you'd like to share some information or tips that you have about this topic or any of the other topics at the blog, feel free to submit your comments. We're going to take our last break. This is Indie Business Radio. Your host, Donna Maria, will be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of GlobalTalkRadio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the final segment of Indie Business Radio today. We're here with Kelly Spiewak. She is a fantastic designer from the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, and she's telling us lots of things about how we can decorate our home offices, even if they're located in a bedroom or some other area of the house that's not separate. And we've got some great tips so far. Now, Kelly, I'd like to ask you some questions about a career as an interior designer. You know, all my indie listeners out there are independent business owners, and there may be some folks out there who are interested in trying your field out as a career. If that describes you, you can call your question or comment into Kelly at 800-773-0355. So what opportunities are there out there, Kelly, for indie business owners to be interior designers?
There's so much opportunity. The field of interior design is so broad, and there's so many different things that an interior designer can get into after they graduate from a program like ours. I mean, there are specialty areas like kitchen design. There's specialty areas like office design. So anything under the sun, from commercial design to residential design and anything in between, is what an interior designer can do when they graduate.
So if you, let's just say you're just, you know, you're starting out, maybe you have a full-time job and your friends have always told you what a great interior designer are, your house is beautifully decorated on a budget. What do you do?
so many of our students are people just like you described who have come back and said, you know, I should have done this 20 years ago. This is what I've always wanted to do. This is what I've been doing on the side forever. And now the way the industry is set up is that the education component is really important because we're dealing with life safety issues. And so, you know, working with architects and other tradespeople, the education is important. So they're coming back to school as a second career and earning a second bachelor's degree in many cases just so that they can do this. And there's definitely a good future in it.
So there's some good night programs available at you know, different schools across the country?
There really are, and they're really becoming flexible to every type of learner. The online program we have here at the Art Institute definitely appeals to that kind of learner, someone that's working full-time, juggling a family life. Maybe they can jump online a couple nights a week and take a couple classes. They're definitely rigorous. They're just as every bit as rigorous as the classes we're holding here on campus, but it's just another delivery mode that gives someone that flexibility that they don't have to drive to a campus and take a class. And, you know, they still submit all the projects and everything. It took me a little while to get used to because it's really not a traditional way in which design has been taught. But it's definitely working really well.
So you can get the exact same degree with all the benefits conferred as someone who actually goes in person?
Correct. Absolutely.
And, Kelly, is there a licensing board for interior designers either at the federal or any state levels that you know of? Do you have to get certified in order to offer the service?
Every state has different requirements, and there are currently, to my knowledge, 24 states that require licensing. And every state is set up differently, but typically the licensing entails a person having a four-year degree, a person practicing for a minimum of 2 years under someone like an architect or another licensed interior designer, and then sitting for an exam. The exam is actually called NCIDQ, which is the National Council for Interior Design Qualification, and it's much, you know, similar to what the bar exam would be for a lawyer. So you've practiced, you have your education behind you, now you need to sit for this exam and prove that you have absorbed and know all this information and can apply it.
And when you said the exam is a standardized exam, but it's only offered by 24 states?
Currently, right now, there are other states, like my state, the state of Pennsylvania, is currently motioning to pass that here in the state of Pennsylvania, too. So every state's kind of at different levels, but there are many states who are full-fledged. In order to practice as an interior designer, call yourself an interior designer, you have to have your NCIDQ certification.
And so you can't call yourself an interior designer at all, even if you say you're not certified?
Correct.
Okay.
You can practice as a designer underneath another designer, but if you were published in a trade journal, for example, you couldn't say that you were Kelly Spiewak interior designer unless you had that certification behind your name.
Okay. And speaking of trade journals, what trade organizations or journals are there that someone who's interested in this field can subscribe to or join to get more information and get their feet wet?
Well, there's definitely the ones that you can find, you know, the regular shelter magazines, the Better Homes and Gardens and the Southern Living, and all of those have some fantastic decorating ideas. Also, a little bit more combined with commercial and residential and a little bit more, I don't want to say higher end, but maybe a little bit more resources to the trade would be magazines like Interior Design Magazine, Architectural Digest Magazine. There's also a magazine called Contract, which is, you know, more commercial type of interior design projects.
Wow. And are there any trade associations that cater to people that provide this kind of service?
There are quite a few. The two big ones are ASID, which is the American Society of Interior Designers, and IIDA, which is the International Interior Design Association. And both organizations have local chapters in all of the cities and, you know, have chapters all over the country supporting both residential and commercial designers.
Uh-huh. And what I know you mentioned earlier that the hourly rates vary greatly from interior design professional to interior design professional, but what are the types of, the types of ranges that you can consider? Let's say you wanted to focus on residential or then home office or then commercial, because it seems to me those may be three different sorts of price points that a person might consider.
Right, in terms of career.
Yes.
Yeah, it really, it varies, and it also varies how firms pay you. I mean, there's a diverse way. A lot of residential designers are working, maybe if you're working for a residential firm or maybe a retail-based firm, so maybe you're working with like a Pottery Barn or an Our House kind of furniture kind of place, you're working as a designer, but you're working on the fact that you're selling the product for that particular company. So you might be working on a draw against a commission. A residential designer who has an independent firm, and that's very common, where a residential designer has a small practice, one or two people at the most, they're typically going to bill out an hourly rate plus the price of the product that they're selling to you. Commercial designers tend to be more salary-based. If you're working for a larger firm, working on a lot of larger-scale projects, the hourly rate typically is billed out to the client, but the designer themselves are paid a salary, you know, plus benefits kind of situation.
Uh-huh. And this kind of business is certainly lends itself to working from home.
Absolutely. Even a lot of commercial designers I know, and myself included, a lot of my work is done at home. I create my own hours, meet with my clients on their time and my time, and that's true across the field.
And Kelly, how do you work as a person who has, is your job at the Art Institute full-time?
It is full-time here, and I manage both students and faculty. So we actually have 4 quarters a year, so it's definitely a full-time job. But it still leaves me some time to work on some consulting, and the faculty.
And how does that work? If you were, let's say you were starting out, or what did you do to start out? That's a good question. I'm thinking of people who might be interested in this. Maybe they do get their degrees and they pass that exam. Cross your fingers, knock on wood. Then what do you do? And by the way, can you take that exam more than once?
You can. You can take it. It's in 3 sections, and you can take it a few times until you pass it. And that's pretty common. It's pretty rigorous, and there's organized study groups that meet to study for the exam as well. So, I first started out in the residential market, and I should probably just say that it's very common in the field of interior design for an interior designer to start out and move every couple years to get a different type of either a better position or a different type of position. I started out in residential, ended up in corporate design. I did a lot of healthcare and a lot of education facilities before I moved into becoming an educator. So, you know, one of my corporate clients actually followed me here to the Art Institute, and so I was able to bill out at an hourly rate. But again, it varies, and it really depends on the situation of your client and what works for you.
Well, what you mentioned a second ago interests me, that people sort of in your field move around from one specialty to another, from a particular type of expertise to another to sort of complement themselves as they grow. And that's really interesting, because what it seems to point out is that you have a variety of different options in your profession, and there are so many different types of places that need to be designed, from homes to home offices to hospitals to nursing homes to commercial offices. I mean, it's like endless.
That's one of my favorite things about the industry. And when I meet with parents who ask me, well, is my son or daughter actually going to get a job when they're done with this? And one of my favorite parts about interior design is the fact that you do have that ability to move around. And maybe you thought you were interested in office design, but when it's all said and done and you have 2 years of office design under your belt, you're really ready to move back into residential and work with some really high-end, you know, home builders and so forth. So I think that's my favorite part about the industry. You can never get bored.
Uh-huh. And how can engaging the services of someone like you paint a different sort of picture for your business compared to someone who decorates on their own without any knowledge about interior design?
I really focus, and designers like myself really focus on the life safety issues first. I think that one of the biggest, you know, myths, I should say, about what an interior designer does is that it's all about decorating. Pick a couple colors, pick a couple fabrics, And that's really the last thing that we as interior designers do. We think more about how's the space going to be used, you know, what's the best way. I mean, a commercial application, making sure that people can get out of the building safely, the fabrics and the materials that we select, that they're safe, that they're not, you know, giving off toxic fumes. Those kinds of things are really important to designers. Working alongside a designer can, they can help you manage the whole project. So they can set you up with a contractor and manage everything from the very initial design all the way to making sure that everything, including the electrician, is in and everything's installed properly.
And Kelly, I would imagine that a hugely growing subset of your field or a part of your field right now must be green design. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's definitely here to stay. When I was in school, obviously green design didn't exist. The concept wasn't even aware, and now it's completely integrated into every class that we have, from early quarter to graduation. Green design encompasses things not only about conserving energy, but using and selecting products that were made with environmentally conscious business practices, and making sure that, you know, you're selecting fabrics that are made from recycled materials. Everything from, you know, using the energy from the sun to, you know, selecting appropriate materials that were considered green or sustainable is definitely an everyday practice in interior design now.
So this is a neat way for someone who has a personal commitment to that kind of lifestyle to extend it to help other people.
Absolutely. And there are some designers who are much more advocate in terms of green, and others that, you know, that they do, or they're environmentally conscious, but you can definitely see who has a passion for green, and they're the ones out there pushing the products and making their sales pitch to have their clients buy those green products.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it difficult to conduct that kind of a sales pitch to a small business owner?
Sometimes, because sometimes the green products are a little bit more expensive. So it's often a challenge, and I've faced that many times where I've wanted to do something a little bit green, or a recycled carpet, or something that was just a little bit more environmentally conscious, and oftentimes it's a little bit more money because of the way it's manufactured, and so sometimes that's a hard sell for a small business, but that's starting to balance off. Green products, because they're starting to become so popular, aren't as expensive as they were, so I think that's going to balance off in the future.
I hope so, because one of the things I think about is how we're all told that in order to be healthy, we should eliminate toxins and be more green, so to speak, and the organic foods and everything. And it's like, you know, there's lots of people in middle America today who just can't afford to buy farm-raised meat.
It's true. I mean, my husband and I just said the same thing. We were at the grocery store, and we're like, wow, it's expensive to eat healthy.
It is, and it's like a lot of the media kind of makes you feel like if you're not doing that, then you're going to die. But
right.
You know, obviously, you know, you have to pay your mortgage too. But anyway,
right. But
how can we get in touch with you to follow up on either your educational program or your own personal services?
Well, you can certainly email me at kspewok, SPEWOCK, at AII.edu.
AII.edu. And what's the, is that the website address for the Art Institute of Pittsburgh?
The website address is theartinstitutes.edu.
Okay, and we can find you there as well.
You can, yes.
Of course,
mm-hmm.
Profiles and everything.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you for joining today. Kelly,
you're welcome.
From the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. Great to have you on the show. Next week, Christine Louise Holbaum, a public relations consultant who is also an author and speaker, is going to be here to talk about how you as a small business owner can deliver your message more clearly, more concisely, and more authentically. This is all about, as you know, I am really heavy on telling your story. If you're a business indie business owner, you have got to tell your story to the people that visit your website or read your brochures, because your story is what separates you from the crowd. And Christine Louise Holbaum is going to be here next week to talk about that. In the meantime, this is Donna Maria. Enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.